fighting for America.
The 12-member jury decided not to press charges against Officer Darren Wilson.
Stop assassinating black people!
Town hall smashed up. Police cars on fire.
You need to stop throwing objects at the police.
One of the tear gas canisters on the street. Dispersing right now.
Fighting for Idaho.
This is 5 million people being given amnesty that Congress rejected, that the American people have rejected.
Fighting for you.
It's just such a great time of year to really be grateful for what we have and to celebrate what we've accomplished over the year and also to do things for others.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the Morning, our favorite man of action, Mike Baker, joining us. And I usually would say, you know, star of television, a former person within the intelligence community, but he always, you know, changes it up on me. So, Mike Baker, what have you been up to?
I'm quarterbacking now for the Denver Broncos. Let's see. What else am I doing?
Omaha. Yes.
Exactly. No, still the same old, same old. You know, we've got the business diligence. That was a free plug, wasn't it? So we're still doing.
It's kind of a trade. Your time for
that's,
the plugs.
That's true. That's true. No, but that pretty much keeps us, you know, busy running the company. Luckily, we've got a lot of great people out there working to keep the trains on time. And so myself and the guys that I started the business with all those years ago after we got out of the service. We're kind of superfluous to the whole thing. We've decided the other day. This thing keeps ticking along and growing because we've been somewhat smart and part of it was luck and we hired terrific people and now the business grows and we kind of stand around as partners and wonder what it is that we're adding to the mix.
Well, hopefully you're going to add something to the show because if we're depending on the host, it ain't happening. let's hit you with some of your outside projects because that is changing, and I want to make sure I have host country sensitivities okay with you. As far as your media entities, we see you on the Fox News channel. We see you locally here. What other projects are you working on that will see you on television and other devices?
Well, thank you for asking. We did the first season on Travel Channel last year. It was called America Declassified. Did very well for them. It was their top-rated show on Sunday evenings. Traveling all around the country, looking at some very interesting issues, some old mysteries, trying to look at some of these possible conspiracies and mysteries from different angles. Did very well for them. So naturally, they said, well, we want to do a season two, but because it's TV, let's change the name because what we'd like to do is confuse the viewers. So we've just finished filming the second season, and it will be airing in the new year. It's called World Access. And this, almost the same idea. We're traveling to some very cool places around the country, outside the country and talking to some wonderful people, getting off the beaten path. And that's really what the show is turning into, is just showing, particularly here in America, if you just make the effort, if you work a little bit harder than just staying on the main roads and looking at the sights there, that you can rediscover how fabulous America is, how wonderful this place is, how many great people we have here in this country.
So it makes you appreciate what you have here by going away.
Absolutely, yeah. And to be honest, we've spent most of this first season of World Access filming here in the States because there's just so much. And I suspect the third season will be getting more outside the country. But I think that will be the result. I think we'll be traveling outside the country realizing what we've got here. And sometimes you forget that. You take things for granted. It's easy to do, I think.
I kind of like the old show where you were swimming out of Alcatraz and, hey, let's see if we can get Mike to do this. And I like that kind
of
thing.
Yeah, and they did actually think about calling it, What Can We Make the Idiot Do Now? that was going to be the title. Apparently that was already taken by another network. But, I'm still you know, jumping into a lot of different situations. I had a really terrific opportunity to go at one point for one of the episodes to go to a firefighter academy down in Florida. And, I mean, who doesn't have respect for our firefighters? You know, the men and women that do that job every day. Yeah, this gave me a whole new perspective and a whole new level of respect. And they absolutely kicked my ass. It was one of the most strenuous, one of the most difficult things I've done in a long time. But great people. And so we do a lot of things like that. We managed to get up to Alaska. We roped down into some glacier caves before they collapse.
Sure.
And you know, so there's a lot of things going on with this next season. Again, I'll come back when we have the air data. It'll be on Sunday evenings again, but as soon as we know what time it's going to start, I'll sneak back in here and let you know.
Definitely, because we'll be giving you a quiz on it, as we always do.
Not a test.
Because, you know, Mike Baker, we have to live vicariously through you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's a really sad life, because I'm not doing a lot. I'm moving pretty slow speed nowadays.
Well, let's talk a little bit at 580KIDO about your story. You've gone from working at the agency to your own business to being a media person, and here we are with the hustle and bustle. And before we get to international affairs, you know, what's been the theme of your life? Because to me, it seems like adapting, improvising, and overcoming. And I know that's the military and the Marines, but You've lived a good life. Any lessons that you've learned talking to these folks in different cultures, whether it's here in our country or in other countries, that can be applicable today?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I come from a military family, and my father, who was the greatest person I'll ever meet, I have no doubt about that, he taught me and my brothers not to settle, never settle. And so We've tended to always strive. I think you have to, within reason, be, you know, hard on yourself. You have to always look for something else, some new challenge, and never allow yourself to become complacent, and never allow yourself to take anything for granted. So he instilled some really important values, I think, in my brothers and hopefully myself. And right from the early days, I mean, I realized, I think, joining the agency, the CIA, that in a way they kind of think the same. You know, don't settle. Don't allow yourself to think that doing the job in just a satisfactory manner is ever all right. Never allow yourself to think that, you know, whatever you're doing is that's as good as it's going to get. And so the agency reinforced some of those values, interestingly enough, that my father had put out there for us. And then I've been lucky enough since getting out of the service to be able to, you know, pursue challenges in the private sector, and whether it's business with diligence, that was another free plug.
we're going to keep you for the hour, so
or pursuing, you know, things on the television side. I think it's always important. I try to tell that to my own boys and my daughter, and I'm very blessed, very fortunate to have wonderful children, and even at their early ages, just trying to, you know, pass along some of that. I mean, if I end up being half, you know, the people say that, but I really mean it. If I end up being half the guy that my dad was, I will die realizing that I was, you know, I was successful. I did well.
Mike Baker with us, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580KIDO. We'll kind of take a look at this kind of like a year in review, if you will. Let's start with our friends in Afghanistan. It's not really on the front pages of the news anymore.
No, it's not. And they are our friends, aren't they? No. Well, some of them are. Right. But you have to pick and choose very carefully out there. Afghanistan is sort of careening towards its logical end, which is as soon as we walk out and the screen door hits the last of our soldiers and we're no longer involved, that's going right back into the hands of the Taliban. And I don't. Nobody can shift me off of that position. I don't think we've done a very good job of explaining what that means down the road. We're very focused, and we tend to be very focused on individual activities. We can't multitask. And so, you know, whether it's, oh, my God, it's all Ebola now, or, oh, it's all the elections now, you know, because it's the midterms, or, oh, it's all Syria and ISIS. I mean, we can't – it's almost as if all these other crises stop because we're too busy focusing on the next shiny object in front of us. But everything ticks along at its own pace. In Afghanistan – is a mess right now, and the new government, obviously there was a lot of talk about how Hamid Karzai was not, as it turns out, no surprise there, was not the savior of a pseudo-democratic and federal state in Afghanistan. In fact, he and his family were extremely corrupt and pocketed a lot of money over the years. But the new government is still dealing with the same problems, a tribal culture, people that don't understand what it is that we're trying to sell to them, people that view anybody in there as an occupying force, whether it's now or during Alexander the Great's time. So Afghanistan is not, I don't believe, is going to be a happy ending.
Do we make a mistake by trying to impose our culture, our values on the folks, and since we're on Afghanistan at 580KIDO, on people that don't have the same values when it comes to women or gays or anything else that we do?
Yes, is the short answer. Yes, you're absolutely right. But we never learn that lesson. And every generation thinks that that generation can do the job better. And so it's not as if we're ignorant of history. It's just that we don't pay attention to it. We don't learn from it. And so I think that with Afghanistan, with Iraq, well, look, Afghanistan, we did a very important thing. We went in there right after 9/11, and we conducted an extremely efficient tactical mission. And we did what we set out to do. And we routed the Taliban. We killed a lot of al-Qaeda support and really put them on their back foot. And by the February of 2002, we should have, if we were really interested in what's in our best national interests, we should have packed up, walked out, advised them if they do it again, if they allow their turf to be used by elements that will attack us or our allies, that we will come back and we will kill more of them. And then we should have left. And we have the ability to monitor. We have the ability to understand if we need to go back in there and do these, again, these very efficient tactical missions. We're very good at those sort of things. We're not good at nation building. We were, there were neocons in the government, and there were folks who felt guilty about how we didn't stay after the Russians left. We had a very successful effort to kick the Russians out of Afghanistan. Once they left, there were a number of people that felt we should have just stayed. Well, honest to God, if we had stayed at that point, we would have been there for 25 years, and nothing else would have changed. We still would have been having this debate. So we just don't seem to learn certain lessons, and you're absolutely right. We can give people money and training and party hats, and they're not going to act like us.
Well, we'll continue about Afghanistan coming up. Our great friend Mike Baker with us at 580KIDO. Kevin Miller with you. Do want to remind you, you can always take a look at what we're up to, 580KIDO.com. Also our blogs, our websites, Twitter, my personal Twitter, Kevin Miller Show. In addition to that, Kevin Miller Show on Facebook. A lot of information there. And I know you get tired of hearing about the social media, but it really is a great way if you have show ideas, if you want to make sure that we have a guest on that you like. That is the way to go. And more coming up with Mike Baker here as we talk about Afghanistan. And the question that I want to bring up to him is going back to the idea of nation building and where we went wrong. I mean, let's face it, if in fact these folks have issues with women, have issues with the gays, have issues with the Christians, and then we start imposing our values, well, that's not going to help their stability, right? So Mike Baker will answer that question next. Hopefully I will remember it, and if not, hold us accountable. Traffic is...
Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Mike Baker with us as we continue on. So, Mike, getting back to, you know, you're a smart guy.
Well, and you're a terrible judge of character.
Well, compare. There goes our credibility. But anyway, you're a smart guy. And we were talking earlier about when we go into these places like Afghanistan, we go, okay, we're going to educate women. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. What's the reaction of the local populace? I mean, that can't help us with nation building and trust and everything else. And did it accelerate the lack of credibility that we have there now?
Well, on an individual level, you can go into a village, as an example, and you can develop a good relationship there with some of those folks. You can build a school, or you can pave a road, or you can do something at that level, at the very grassroots level. And yes, you'll get some good positive feedback. Does that translate then into success in building institutions nationwide? Whether it's the military and law enforcement or government, that will then display some level of democratic principles and respect for individual rights and the things that we know about and we care about here in this country. No, it doesn't. It just means that you've won over some people for a short period of time because you've given them some books or some shots or paved a road. That's what it means. And we tend to misinterpret that. And so we'll get feedback from these teams working in some of the villages. And they'll say, well, yeah, you know, these guys, we had a tribal meeting, and they really love us. Well, sure they love you. You just gave them some free stuff. What does that sound like? And
right.
But does that mean that it's going to hold together once you're gone? Or once the Taliban walks into that village and says, you know what, you cooperate with them again, we're going to kill every one of you. And they'll do it. And so we don't understand sometimes there's a disconnect between what you do at the grassroots level and what our grand policy is at 30,000 foot from a national security or national interest level.
Why are they so fierce? I mean, they call it the graveyard of empires.
Well, first of all, it's the environment. It's the terrain. It's the climate. You got to be tough to live in a place like that. They don't have much, so they can survive without much, and they don't need much to be motivated. So they make a formidable enemy, and they've got a history of fighting. You know, village against village, tribe against tribe, you know, family against family. I mean, it's what they almost what they do. I don't want to oversimplify it.
No, that's fine. We like simplification here. Going back to the broader aspect, we'll talk a little bit about the Middle East, but did Saddam Hussein have it right? I mean, look, he was a dictator. He was horrible. His sons were terrible. But when we're talking about educating women and the closest thing to a Western style, I guess, embracing of values, if you will, because women there were educated. People went to college. I guess we could say the same thing for the Iranians. I mean, in that region, the guy that we took down, was he the most progressive when it comes to rights for women?
No, I wouldn't go that far say that. but was it better the devil we knew? Is there any other way to hold together a country like that? I mean, you go back, you look at Yugoslavia with Tito, and what happened to that that mess when we fell into the Balkans crisis. But look at Iraq and our inability to hold it together now. So, you know, I suppose you could argue, and nobody likes to say it, but you could argue that there are some environments where a strong man is what's required because of the mindset, the culture, the makeup, the demographic, whatever it is of that particular state, nation. So I wouldn't go so far as to say anything good about Saddam Hussein other than, look, he was a hard-ass dictator who held that country for the most part together through brutality for the most part.
Could we ever get a strong man again there to bring it back, considering that stealthily we're bringing folks back in, probably some colleagues of yours, never mind the private contractors, when we've got ISIS running wild?
This is interesting. We could talk about this one all day. Look, the White House currently is, they've just authorized, and they did it on a Friday. Always do your important, unpopular decisions on Friday afternoons so that it misses the press cycle. But they announced last week that we're going to send another 1,500 advisors to work against the ISIS problem. And now, what does that mean? Well, they said it doesn't mean mission creep, because they said, well, look, our mission's the same. We're still just going to be advising. We're going to be doing that, which is the White House playing semantics. They're very good at this. They're always very good at just playing with words. And for the most part, a lot of the media goes along with it. It is mission creep, because one of the definitions of mission creep is just size of the activity. So we're throwing more advisors into the mix. We're going to run out of room in the back offices. They're going to have to be forward deployed at some point and below the brigade level. So we're going to be getting our guys into combat situations. It's not hard to see where this may be going in a very sort of half-measured, slow steps, because it's politically unpopular. Yes, people want them to do something about ISIS, but his base would go apoplectic if he declared we're going to actually engage in a surge in an aggressive fashion to try to deal with this problem.
That that embassy, though, it's almost like a modern-day fort or prison. You know, I don't want to reveal where you've been and what you've done. I could say in my own humble, bumble way, I've been there once. Mm-hmm. It's an impressive facility, but again, it has its limits, and you have everybody concentrated in that embassy. It makes it easy to target them.
It does, and it also makes it very difficult to do anything meaningful with the Iraqi military. Look, we've been there for how long now? 7,000 years? I mean, it seems,
right.
You know, all the men and women that have lost their lives, have been injured, have you know, the treasure that we've given up. And part of what we were supposed to be doing was building the Iraqi institutions, including the military and the police. And so now what we're saying is, well, we can't leave it up to them because we need to work to improve the Iraqi military. So what we're going to do over the course of the next year, our strategy is to train up more Iraqi military. Well, what the hell have we been doing? Well, we haven't been doing anything for the handful of the past years because we closed the door.
We turned everything over to them.
We turned everything over to them. Now, you know, that was a decision. That's, you know, that's fine for, you know, the folks that say, because there's a conflict here. The conflict is, should we have been there in the first case? Well, you know, as it turns out, intelligence was flawed, right? So you could argue, well, we didn't need to, but it was an international belief that we should go in there. It wasn't just the U.S. saying we should go in. So we went in, we broke it. As Colin Powell says, we got to do something with it. And, you know, I would argue that against my own philosophy, which is that we shouldn't be nation building, once you do that, though, you better do it right, right? And you better get it done. And we lost our way in Iraq because we just got tired. And so I have a feeling that what's going to happen with ISIS, which is a very brutal organization, they now have territorial integrity. They've developed this caliphate idea in a physical manner, and it's giving them a great deal of success in recruitment, in raising finances, in ability to train because they've got territorial integrity. If we decide here in the States that it's in our national interest not to allow there to be an extremist state with that territorial integrity, because we know what they do when they do. It's not like they're going to stop at the borders.
Right. They're coming for us.
They're coming for us. They're coming for the Saudis, the Jordanians. That's their desire, and they've stated it as much. If we decide that's in our best interest, then we better get on the giddy-up and do it in a big way and defeat it. But we're not. We're in a strategy right now that says, yes, it's in our national interest, but we're going to take half steps. And so essentially our strategy is to create a stalemate, not a victory. And it's very frustrating.
More coming up with Mike Baker, Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Sean Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Our friend Mike Baker with us, talking more about the rise of ISIS. So I have to ask you, as someone who has been at the highest levels, have traveled, and I don't want you to reveal anything, and these are my words, not yours, sir. What is the psychology of ISIS that they do these horrendous acts, James Foley and others, and you're thinking to myself, what barbarism? And again, you're familiar with things that happen much more deadly or torture people, but they don't broadcast it. What's going on with that?
Well, you raise a really important point, which is that we don't process this well. We don't understand the level of brutality that the extremists, the jihadists, ISIS, Al-Qaeda elements, that they're willing to engage in. And so we try to put a Western view on things. We try to resolve it from our Western perspective. Okay, this is what we have to do. We need a more inclusive government, because we have a more inclusive government that will bring the Sunnis in and they'll be happier and they won't engage in this. That's ridiculous. But it's how we think. And we've always been that way. You look at the Vietnam War. We didn't understand. You know, we go in and we would inoculate kids in a village, and then what would happen? The VC would walk in there and kill people because they had cooperated with the Americans. And it's just something that over the years we have a hard time with. ISIS is no different at the 30,000-foot level than Al-Qaeda in the sense that it's all extremism. It's Muslim extremism. I don't know how we can call it anything. I mean, you know, people don't want to say, well, it's Muslim. It's part of Islam. But that's what it is. When we start facing a threat from some other element, Scandinavians, then let's call it Scandinavian terrorism. Right now, it's Muslim extremism. And at the 30,000-foot level, it doesn't matter whether we're talking about Al-Qaeda or ISIS. It's all the same. ISIS is having success because they realized the importance and the opportunity, and they had some resource to start sweeping up territory. And in doing so, they understood they were smart enough because they're part of their senior leadership are former Saddam Hussein military officers. And so their command and control, their tactics, their logistics and back office operations are run mostly by former military Sunnis who came out of the Hussein era. And they understood the importance of capturing territory, capturing the resources that were there, whether it's military bases and the gear that they pull out, whether it's the oil refineries, the banks, whatever it is.
Their currency and everything.
Yeah. Absolutely. So they're making a great deal of money right now. They're, by any estimate, they're making conservatively probably $1 million to $2 million a day just off of illegal sales of oil from the refineries that they've got. And that puts them in a world that we just aren't familiar with in terms of terrorist organizations. And we have to stop calling it a terrorist organization at this point and start calling it a terrorist state, because that's what they've acquired.
Well, but most of us would think, well, Mike Baker, why don't we know where they are, we know the facilities they have, why not just take them out? Easier said than
you
done.
You and me, we're right on the same page. We should be running this operation, because you're absolutely right. There's this fear of what? Fear of what? Fear of if we target and attack the refineries that they hold, that somehow it'll be what? Maybe it's going to increase, you know, the potential for global warming. which apparently has captured the minds of the White House more than anything else right now. So I don't know. There's a reluctance to address this problem in a very aggressive manner. But what's happening is every day that we continue these half measures, and I know everybody's tired. Who isn't tired of the war on terror? We're all tired of engagement in the Middle East.
They're not tired, Mike Baker.
They're not tired. No, they're the only ones who aren't tired. And so we better get on board with the notion that while we may be fatigued from the war on terror and we really don't want to be engaged, and can't we just make it go away, which is kind of what the narrative was from the White House for the past couple of years. We've decimated Al-Qaeda and let's focus on other things because, you know, if we hope long enough, it'll happen. The enemy doesn't think that way. And so we've got to get involved because every day they get stronger in the sense of being able to hold more of that territory, getting better at raising finances, getting better at recruitment, because the longer they exist as a potential state, the more exciting that is to all those disaffected and easily impressioned people out there that they recruit from. So I would argue that right now, again, we're on this path that says, and the White House keeps talking about this. The White House keeps right now saying, well, this is going to be a long and difficult journey. It's going to be a long and difficult fight. Chuck Hagel, the defense secretary, said that the other day. It's going to be very difficult. Well, of course it is. Given the strategy that you're pursuing, yes, it's going to be. We're making it such. We can make this thing drag on as long as they want to if we just continue these half measures.
I equate it to Mike Baker, and again, I say this with the utmost respect, sir, that when somebody calls you out into the parking lot and they're not going to take no for an answer, you either go out and face them or they're coming in to get you. And, you know, they're threatening kindergartens in this country. They're talking about this. It's only a matter of time before they impact us here. They're not going to go away unless we make them go away.
Right. And we know we don't need another case study of what happens when extremists have the ability to operate in an area where they feel comfortable, where they can plot, plan, train, raise finances, develop operational ideas. We know what they're going to do, and they're very clear about this. ISIS has been around for a while, despite, again, what the White House said about how, well, this caught us by surprise. That was nonsense. It was over a year ago, military was briefing the White House and others on the threat from ISIS and their sweep through parts of Iraq. And so it's not as if this caught us by surprise. And it's not as if we don't understand what they want. They're not just going to grab this territory, hold it, draw the curtains, and say, now we're happy. So we have to make this decision. And again, it's unpopular, I realize that. But if we decide that it's in our national interest, if we decide it's not, then fine. Let's just go home and let them, you know, deal with themselves and let's see what happens. But we're going to pay a bigger price down the road.
Mike Baker with us, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO. What causes somebody from Chicago or Denver to be recruited by these thugs, these terrorists, these barbarians through social media?
Well, Chicago, I think they just get frustrated with the Cubs and the Bears. and who wouldn't, right?
Right.
I don't mean to make light of it, but any chance I get to poke fun at the Cubs, my wife is from Idaho, but since a little girl, she's been a Cubs fan.
Showing your affection, huh?
Yeah, so she knows. Mm-hmm. She knows disappointment. and then she marries me, and it just compounded. the question about what allows somebody to be kind of pulled into the dark side of jihadism, extremism, is it's fairly complicated. And it ranges from dedicated extremist belief, dedicated, knowledgeable, extremists who are committed to lunatics who just are looking for something to latch onto, and it just happens to be that moment when they read some rant from an emir somewhere on the internet. So there's a variety of reasons that make it happen, but it's interesting and it's a very important point because as long as whether it's ISIS or Al-Qaeda or any extremist group, has the ability, and they get more and more sophisticated at using social media. ISIS is an example. People have talked about how successful they've been. Well, they've been successful because they've been building on what they've learned from watching Al-Qaeda do it over these years. And as long as they're able to go out there and put their message out, there will always be sort of what appears to be almost a bottomless well of disaffected, easily impressionable, usually unemployed males who just latch on. They're looking for something, and this happens to be what they find. Again, there's the psychos, the lunatics, like the New York City hatchet guy.
Right.
Well, but at the same time, this is what he latched onto. Now, the thing you have to be careful about is, and the media was, they were jumping all over this lone wolf issue when we had the attacks in Ontario that had followed on from the attacks in Melbourne, Australia, that then led to the attack in New York. So you had a grouping of these things. So suddenly it was all about the lone wolf. The problem is that minimizes the problem. And it makes it seem as if these guys are just out there. It's going to happen because, but it ignores the fact that ISIS, Al-Qaeda, whatever you want to call it, the Muslim extremists, are actively engaged. And they don't care whether they recruit a nutcase who goes out and does something or an extremely committed Muslim extremist. They don't care who it is on that, where they stand on that spectrum, psycho, extremist, as long as they go out and do something.
It seems, though, we're just not set up to stop them when we think about this. And I know this has been the theme, but again, it's like an orthodox defense against a spread or hurry-up offense. It just doesn't seem that we're set up to do this.
No, that's a really good way to put it, actually. And it's true, and we've known since, you know, the shooting of JFK or you know, Sirhan or whatever it may be, that sort of this concept of the individual going out there, whatever their motivation is, always tougher than targeting a group. You know, what do you get from an Al-Qaeda element? Well, if you got an Al-Qaeda cell somewhere, you've got more communication. You've got financial transactions likely going on. You've got movement. You know, you've got the opportunity to identify something happening that can then give you a source, and you can get in there and you can terminate the problem. But with the individual who's just perhaps sitting in the basement, you know, their parents' house, getting more and more agitated, and they don't know why. And again, maybe they're a nut, maybe they're not. Maybe they're, you know, maybe they've been going to the local mosque for several years. It doesn't matter. Again, from the bad guy's perspective, as long as they get them to go out there and do something. Baghdadi, the head of ISIS, just came out with his audio tape. And in part, that was to show that he hadn't been killed in the recent airstrike. But he came out and he said, we need these sort of these eruptions, these volcanic eruptions of jihadism
right.
all over the world. Just get out there and do
call
it.
Call to action.
Right. And it's a different call to action than it used to be. When during the ISIS early days, it was come on out, get to Syria, get to Iraq, however that you can, get here and join the fight. And now what they're saying is, well, if you're not able to get to Syria or Iraq, then what the hell are you doing to support us? Get out there wherever you happen to be, whether it's Omaha or Caracas or wherever.
So. More coming up with our friend Mike Baker, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Let's take a look at how you're getting to work safely and on time.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO. You know, let me thank you, Mike Baker. Kevin Miller here with our friend Mike Baker. Thanks for taking time with us today.
No, absolutely. This is great. Now, you know what? I've said it before, I think, when I've been here, but I love this town. I couldn't be happier. We moved out here from the East Coast, from New York, about a couple of years ago. Actually, it was about 2 years ago this Thanksgiving, and I couldn't be happier. It's such a wonderful environment. You know, our kids are so excited to be here. And so anything, you know, I can do locally, I think it's a terrific opportunity, and I'm very happy for it and grateful for it.
Let me hit you with this. Are we sending – what type of message are we sending when we allow kooks – to run into the White House?
I mean, following an election or what? Oh, you mean over the fence. Okay.
But a bump.
Yeah. I'm here every Friday.
Yeah, but you know, here we're dealing with ISIS. I mean, when they see some goof running in and getting in,
right,
as a guy who's been in the field, you tell me.
Well, what it tells them... because nothing happens in a bubble, so it's not as if ISIS or Al Qaeda are sitting in a cave somewhere. It's not like that. They're paying a lot of attention to everything that happens, and so when they see these incidents happen, then you know probably what crosses their mind. I'm speculating, but if I were them, I'd think, wow, it's not quite the hard target that I thought it was. That seems easier,
right?
And so, you know, every time something like that happens, or every time there's a New York City hatchet attack on police officers, or the Bebo shooting up in Canada, or the attack in Melbourne, it reinforces in their minds that they're on the right path, that they should be encouraging people to get out there and do these small scale things. Whatever it is, get out there and do that. And it's a big concern. I was just in London and over this past few days and the Met Police, we've got some terrific friends in the Met Police and MI5, they had a very successful operation. They wrapped up four individuals in the Thames Valley outside of London who had gotten to the point where they were obtaining weapons to carry out an attack. you know, similar to what, you know, they had happened in London a while back with the tragic killing of a young soldier named Lee Rigby. And that's an interesting case because what had happened there was the service had been monitoring these individuals. And they realized through intel that these individuals were looking to go to Syria and get in the fight. And so, interestingly, the authorities went and pulled their passports and basically said, okay, you can't travel, which is counterintuitive to what a lot of people would think. A lot of people would think, well, let them go and then pull their passports, right?
Right.
But from an operational perspective, sometimes what you want to do is you then want to monitor and watch and see what happens. Well, what happened was they got very upset, and they said, well, if they're going to screw with us like that and take our passports, we're going to do an attack here in the country. Mm. And so then they gathered further intel because they were able to watch them. These guys weren't necessarily Lex Luthor types. And they wrapped it up, but it was a very good operation. But it shows you, and they're very worried, and they're very worried here in the States about these low-level types of attacks. And so when you do get a fence jumper at the White House, I think it raises anxiety among the general public. It amazes a lot of people that we weren't able to stop something like that. And it, in a way, in an odd way, encourages the extremists.
Yes. Mike Baker, we encourage you to come back all the time because we love the content.
Thank you. Thank you very much. There's a lot going on in the world. I know it's sometimes it seems like there's a lot of crises all happening at once. And there are. We haven't even touched on Russia. We haven't touched on Iran, which is a real mess. And
always leave them wanting more.
China. That's right. So we got a lot we could go over. Yeah. Sorry about that. And the Kardashians. Who doesn't want to talk about them?
All right. In-depth team coverage of the Kardashians. Mike Baker. You heard it here first. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580. 580-